All right, guys, we're going to talk about our sponsor, Email Tool Tester. So Email Tool Tester is a place that you can go to review different email marketing services and decide which one is going to be best for your business. I know that you all probably remember a couple weeks ago when social media crashed, Facebook, Instagram, all of that were down. And how would your business survive if all of a sudden social media was gone? And the answer to that is email marketing. We know it's important. In my business, you can't have one without the other, but I use social media to connect with my customers, let them know what's going on. But email marketing is really where I get all of my sales. That's how my customers know exactly when and where they can get flowers, and it's my direct contact with them. So Email Tool Tester is just the place to go to get started. And I know that you probably have it on your to-do list. You just don't even know where to begin. So if you click the link in my episode notes, there is actually a free ebook called The Email Marketing Crash Course. And it's a complete guide for small business owners to just learn how to increase their revenues using email marketing. So go ahead, take a look. Would love to hear what you think. And hopefully it's useful for you and you can get to selling your flowers, because your business is not growing flowers. Your business is selling flowers. So Email Tool Tester can help you get started doing that. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Sunny Mary Meadow podcast. I am your host, Liz Fidler, and I have got Lyselott here on the podcast with me. That's how you pronounce it, right?
Yes, Lyselott, like Lancelot.
Okay, Lyselott. Okay. Thank you so much. You wrote in your email, like, pronounce Lyselott. And okay, so you obviously get that a lot. My last name is Fidler and it looks like Fiedler. So that's how we pronounce it. So thank you so much for coming on. Can you first of all tell us your full name, your business, where you're at, what zone you're in, just kind of give us a little bio.
So my name is Lyselott Vince. It's a strange name. I was born in the Netherlands, so I moved to the States when I was young. And you're right, my name gets confused and people don't know how to say it.
And it's not a strange name. It's just, I want to be respectful. And so I said, how do you pronounce it? Like, that's what I meant, it fully respectful. I didn't want to say it wrong.
I have a flower farm, which I started, this would be my third season. It's called 80 Miles North, and it's a nod to New York City, where I met my husband, where I started working after college. We are located in the Hudson Valley near Millbrook, New York, and we have three kids. About 15 years ago, we bought this farm, and it had like this rundown vegetable garden with like this sad little composter, one of those plastic ones. And I was like, I want to know what this is all about, because I hadn't really like gardened or composted before. So that was really sort of what got me going. As my kids got older, I started taking classes at New York Botanical Gardens, where I got a certificate in gardening and one in botany. I recently became a master gardener, and now I'm an empty nester. So the flower farming is kind of something that I've always wanted to do, but now I really have the time to do it.
So what do you grow? When do you sell? What's your growing season look like?
In the springtime, I do ranunculus, tulips. I have some daffodils, some hyacinths, and then I will transition to more of the springtime flowers. I don't really have anything early summer besides the ranunculus. And then I'll plant my dahlias, which will kind of bring me through the rest of the end of the summer. But I will have cosmos. I keep saying cosmos. I don't like cosmos. I like the foliage, but not the flower so much. They just don't do it for me. I have zinnias, which I'm really excited about. And then a lot of fillers. And I think that is about it. Oh, and snapdragons.
And then do you do a CSA, a U-pick? Do you sell to florists? What is your target customer base?
I did a CSA last year. I'm kind of playing around with different ways of selling. I was also selling flowers to not a florist, but I don't know how to describe this store. It's called Orangerie here in Millbrook. And they have all kinds of things like homewares, and they have a little flower section. So I would just provide four or five bouquets, usually at the weekends, you know, for people having dinner parties, things like that. And then I would do my own thing on the side. So this year, I'm just trying to figure out what that looks like.
Yeah, exactly. And figuring out what you want to grow, who your target customer is, or who the customer base is and what they want you to grow. And it's a lot of moving parts, but figuring that out.
Right. And especially being, you know, this is my third year, it gets, mm-hmm. I think I'm going to be pivoting quite a bit.
Until
I find my groove.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the main reason I wanted you to come on here was to talk about compost. I said, does anyone make their own compost? And I am confident that I could have, there are a lot of resources of, you know, compost companies that I could have, you know, had come on, but the majority of my listeners are looking for a way to do it themselves, right? Because, okay, is it really that complicated? How do we do it? And so you sent me an email with, you know, your three different piles, and I kind of make my own compost, but I need to get better about it. So I also do have three piles, but things don't get stirred as often as they should. And it's a goal this year to work on it. So tell us about your journey with making your own compost.
So it all started with the rundown vegetable garden where they had this little plastic, not a tumbler, but a plastic thing where you just added the compost and it was kind of broken down. And it got me thinking, like, I have all this vegetable waste. This is before I did flower farming. I had animals, I have donkeys, so I have their manure, I have grass clippings, all the food waste that we have besides the animal, you know, we don't put any animal, like any meat in there. And it just seemed like a real waste to put this all in the landfill. And mm-hmm. so I decided that I wanted to scale up. And so up the hill from where the house is we have just a field, and it's pretty level. And we decided to start dumping all the manure. So there are three piles, the one that we add to, and the one that is slightly finished, and the one that's completely finished. And so it's a constant shift of turning the one that is one that we add to, and then we'll have to take the stuff that's almost finished, put it in the second pile, turn that, and then it all ends up in the final pile.
Mm-hmm. So is it on concrete slabs? Is it in the middle of the dirt? Is it, where is it?
Right on top of grass. I don't have anything that protects the sides. It's just a giant pile. Mm-hmm. And it's quite large. I can actually climb my compost pile. And we require to turn it takes a backhoe.
Yep.
And I'm not good at the backhoe. So one of my guys will turn it with the backhoe, and he's trying to teach me how to use it, but that's how we turn it.
So do you have a backhoe attachment for like your tractor or what?
Yes, we have it's a Kubota tractor, I think, with a backhoe attachment.
Okay.
So every couple of weeks, even in the wintertime, we end up turning it because mm-hmm. we generate a lot of waste, even in the winter.
Yep.
It's more animal waste in the winter. And then the summer, obviously, when, you know, we start cutting grass and I have all this stuff from the flower farm, it all gets dumped on there.
What kind of farm do you have with animal waste, or what other?
We have two donkeys and two horses.
Okay, that's right. Yeah.
So we have a lot of animal, their manure, and then also their bedding. We use pine shaving, so that gets added to it as well.
Yep, and that's, so I've got chickens, and yep, I use wood chips. And that, I mean, it's powdery, right? Like it's part, you know, those wood chips turn just, or, you know, the.
It's really lovely once it's all finished. I mean, you can't even recognize what you actually put in to start with. I am actually sending off my compost to a, which I didn't realize you could actually get your compost tested as well for all various kinds of things.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do that tomorrow. I've got a gallon sized bag of compost and I'm going to send off and see what they say.
Yeah. So that's exciting. My piles are on concrete because I have, it's an old feedlot. This dairy used to be. And so we have concrete, but we don't have a backhoe attachment for our Kubota. So I have a Kubota skid steer and I have a John Deere tractor.
Right.
I have one of each, but, I use the big, enormous snow bucket.
Yep.
But when I say I mean, yep. And you have to flip it. And so my skills aren't quite there because you have to be really careful that you're not just like pushing it forward and pushing it in a corner, and the way it's at in the concrete, like there's some fencing. So you can't like,
got to approach it at all the various sides.
You have to go from all sides. So, okay. So what types of things, you said something in there about your leaves. Do you put all leaves in there or no?
I don't put all my leaves in. I actually keep a separate pile for my leaves because I also like to use leaf mold. So leaves will end up in there, but the leaves that fall off the trees in my yard, I keep separately. We'll collect them and then we'll put them in a pile and that gets broken down. That's kind of cold composting that never really heats up. And that I think bacteria, no, maybe it's fungi that, that break that down. The only leaves that I do not add are black walnuts leaves because they're allopathic, something or other.
Yeah,
I can't pronounce the word, which means that they inhibit other things from growing. So those we just put somewhere completely different and we just leave them on the ground.
Yeah. I add a lot of my grass clippings. We have a bagger for our lawn and then, you know, I'll add grass clippings and leaves and which again, like we have the bagger so I can bag them up. But then a lot of it is the chicken compost. As far as like the food and table scraps and that type of thing, at what point, I mean, I'm just curious, and this might seem like a little, like I need to get better about doing that and like saving my scraps. Although I give a lot of like my food scraps to my chickens and like, do you keep a bucket underneath your sink? Like, what do you do?
I have a bowl that I have by my sink and it drives my husband crazy. He's like, are you going to empty this? It's just sitting here. I'm like, don't worry, I'll get to it. But what I've also done is I have a large Ziploc bag now in my freezer. So I can just add compost to that bag and it freezes. And once that's full, I'll bring it out to the pile. So it eliminates, you know, any kind of smell, fruit flies, things like that. But yes, I do keep a bowl next to my sink. I put tea bags in there, any kind of fruit and vegetable scraps, basically anything that I generate at home while I'm cooking will go in there. And not everything can go in there. Like, you know,
There's some things that can't.
There's some definite things that can't because it will attract animals. And if you live, you know, if your lot lines are very close, you'll end up, you know, angering your neighbors if you get mice and all kinds of creatures roaming around in your compost pile. So yeah, don't add meat. Dairy products, probably not a good idea. Cat litter, no. Your dog waste, not a good idea either. So basically anything organic, like vegetables, grass clippings. I actually do cardboard as well. I keep all of like my Amazon boxes and newspapers can go in there. What I do is I every 6 months we'll rent one of those giant shredders, like where you put the branches in after you've pruned something, and we'll put the cardboard through. So it breaks it down into smaller pieces.
Yeah.
And break down much quicker in my pile as opposed to these large pieces of flat cardboard.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. What do you do with like your stems or your petals or any of that stuff? Does that all go in there as well, I would assume?
All that goes in, though. For example, if I have a dahlia that's diseased or something like that, I will not add that. I don't want to intentionally add disease to my compost pile. So that will get put in the garbage can.
Yeah, what we do is, so we have when we're out harvesting, we have our four-wheeler and then we have a wagon behind it. That's like a flat wagon for the buckets of flowers. And then I used to have another wagon with like, actually we would put a couple cardboard boxes in there because we strip all the stems in the field and we like try to level them all off so that if it's a florist buying it or whatever, like we want all of our snapdragons to be very, as much as we can, consistent stems. So we, you know, we pick them in bunches of 10 and then, you know, if we need to, we just try to do all of that work in the field. And so we actually just bought a wagon that it has a foot pedal, so it'll dump. So now we're doing that. So, I mean, that's half full every single day. Like when you say, well, you know, to make your own compost. And I hear so many people saying, well, I don't use enough. We don't have enough waste. I'm like, what are you doing? Do. All your leaves, all your stems. I mean, if I had to measure it, it's 100 gallons a week, at least.
You'll be amazed how much you can actually generate. Moldy bread, newspapers, over a whole week. Yeah, all the food scraps that you end up throwing away in the garbage. Like I've been known to I kind of yell at my family sometimes, that goes in the compost and I'll dig it out of the garbage can. But yeah, you can generate quite a bit if you're diligent and if you have a good system in place. It's all about systems.
Taking a quick break from this episode to ask a very, very tiny favor of you. If you're enjoying this podcast, please hit pause and go and give us a 5-star rating. If you feel compelled or inclined to write a review, that would be so appreciated. But honestly, the rating is all we're asking right now. Podcasts get recommended to people based on downloads and keywords and ratings. And if lots of people are listening and rating it high, then the platforms try to find more people that they think will also like it. So it's a really simple and easy thing for you to do, but it really does mean so much to us. So please consider hitting pause, giving it a 5-star rating, and then coming back and finishing this episode. Thank you.
So say it is July and you're stripping all the stems, you know, and you're putting it in pile number one. When do you use pile number three? Is it like a 2-year cycle? Is it a 1 year? Is it a 6 month? Like, how does that typically work?
It's kind of a complicated answer because it depends on how big your pile is and how hot it gets. So if you have a tiny little pile, it's not going to heat up as much. And so you could be waiting maybe 6 months, maybe longer. My pile is maybe too big, but it does break down. So I can get in the heat of the summer, I can get compost maybe in 3 to 4 months.
Okay.
But that requires consistent turning. It requires the right amount of moisture, the correct balance of carbons versus nitrogen. So you can actually stop or slow down the compost process if you don't have those ratios correct. So you want about 45 to 50% moisture content. Now, I don't have a hose nearby, so I just kind of rely on the rain. And when I add grass, there's moisture in there. So you want the consistency of the compost to sort of feel like a wrung out sponge.
Okay.
If it's you should definitely add some water because that will start the compost process. If you have too much water, it becomes anaerobic and then you get all kinds of smells and things like that. So it's like, it's a delicate dance, but once you kind of get a feel for it, you'll quickly learn what to add, when to add it, when to turn. And I like to, I've got this giant, it looks like a meat thermometer, but it's giant. And I was actually just measuring my compost pile now just for the heat. And mine got up to 110 in a certain spot. It was between 80 and 110. And we just had like 15 degree nights.
Yeah.
The last. So it is actively composting. Like, things are breaking down even in the wintertime. It's slower, but it does break down.
What's the temperature in the summer?
That's a good question. I think
it's fascinating to me. I never even thought about any of this stuff.
It's really fun to kind of geek out about this.
Oh, I'm like, oh, I need a big thermometer.
I can send you the link. It was just online.
We'll check it out. We'll check it on the episode notes.
Yes. If it gets above, let me see, if it gets over 145 degrees, your compost pile is too hot. I think I've had it around the 130-ish level. I would have to do that again once the temperature starts.
What do you do if it's too hot?
Too hot, you turn it. It cools things down.
Got it.
We turn every 2 to 2 weeks in the summertime, slightly less in the wintertime.
Okay. And what, okay, so the temperature where you live, you said you're now 6A?
Yeah. And we can get, you know, really hot summers. We can, you know, hot, humid 90s.
Yep.
80s to 90s is our normal summer. Mm-hmm. Winters, we can have anything. Like today, it's going to be 50 degrees, but like last night it was 15. So we can get that whole range.
So what tips would you have for starting out? Because I think it can get pretty overwhelming. I think it can get, you know, but I think the majority of us, I'll never forget this. December, my friend Hillary, so she has Meadow Forge Flower Farm, and I volunteered. It was a pretty big undertaking, and I made the florals for a very, very large gala in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. It was a friend of mine, 850 people there, and it was like, I mean, it's like $8,500 worth of flowers, and you know, she came and helped, and the other helpers that I had lined up, like, it was just like the perfect storm of like people canceling. And we just had so much to do, and we were renting this floral space in Sioux Falls. And it was like up in this level. And I remember how shocked we were. And I'm, you know, and it's just a nod to locally grown florists, but like, what do you do with all the stems? Like all the,
once you put them in the vases, you know,
and yeah. And they're just like, oh, we just throw it. And it's like, oh, huh, like we just, garbage. Yeah, we just take it for granted as local flower farmers, how many things we have access to. And it's like composting it. And like you said, that amount is huge. And it makes me wonder, because there are so many flower farmers that when I polled, nobody was making their own compost. And I have been, but literally how I got started is I have piles of chicken poop. Every time we clean out the poop, we just make a pile. And I grew up crop farming, and you know, the manure from the cattle, from the feedlot, from the bedding goes on the field. Like that's just what I grew up doing. And so now when people are bringing in these truckloads of compost and all of these things, and I get it that sometimes it's hard to get ahead with it and to remember to stir and to remember to this, but I'm genuinely curious what people do with all of their stems if they don't compost. I don't know what they do with it.
It goes into the landfill, sadly. It's something I really try to avoid, because you're throwing away such valuable material that you can put right back into your soil. It just requires just that little extra effort. Mm-hmm. And there's so many myths about composting. Like people think it's too difficult, or that it costs too much money, or that you need a lot of space, that it'll attract animals. And those things aren't necessarily true. I mean, let's say you live in an apartment, you could do vermicomposting, which I don't do because I can just take it out to my field. Or you can do bokashi composting, which I'm not really familiar with, but you can, that's the one where you do it in a tub and you can add like meats and all kinds of things to it. If you have, you know, just your general garden or flower farm, just pick a piece of land or a section of your garden where you're not really going to see it that much, probably not very close to your neighbors either, but it needs some sun. You need some access to water. The minimum size should probably be 3x3x3 or 4x4x4, because you want the compost to get hot. And if it doesn't get hot, you're not going to get it to break down. Mm-hmm. So that's the bare minimum. Some people will do like chicken wire, where they'll create like a sort of like a square where they'll add the compost to it. Then with like, perhaps with like T-posts, you wrap the mm-hmm. compost or the chicken wire around it. And that acts as the collection area. And mm-hmm. then once you want to turn it, you just take that up, remove the chicken wire, and then you take the, like a pitchfork, and you put it back into the next square. So that's an easy way to kind of turn it if you don't have a backhoe, or if you're not doing it on a huge scale. There's tumblers, there's all kinds of things on the market that you can get for composting.
So would you say, you know, when you're talking about the different options that you have, obviously you have a Kubota with a
backhoe
excavator bucket, you know, to turn it backward. Cause like I said, mine, everything is forward. It'd be nice to turn it backward. But besides that, I mean, your setup is just wide open, right? It's just,
I can access it from like 360. I can access it from all sides, which we have to do. Cause like you said, once you push it, it pushes it forward, but you also want to like turn it. So mm-hmm. you want to bring everything that's on the outside back in the inside. So it's,
yeah,
that's,
I think where people get so overwhelmed, and why I think this podcast in general, what I'm trying to do is so important, is, you know, I've seen people take pictures or send me things. Do you know what I'm talking about with like the U-shape, like compost, and they make it so complicated. Like that's what you think is composting on the internet, but then you have to like hand shovel things. Of course, that's not sustainable.
Like, well, like the free bin thing where you
Yep. And I get that. Like it's cute and it's trendy, and that's what we see on Pinterest. But I think that's the problem, like the rabbit hole that we can go down as flower farmers or whatever it is we're trying to do. It makes it seem like if this is what you want to do, this is how you have to do it. And that's complicated. It's like, I mean, an example that I'll compare it to is growing in raised beds. If you don't have to grow in raised beds, why would you? Like, I just, if you don't have to, it's to try to stir and shovels and everything on your back. Like, I get it if you have absolutely clay soil and you need raised beds, And, you know, if you're putting your high tunnel in a really low area where it might flood or whatever, but part of me is like, then maybe that ground isn't meant for, you know, but the raised beds are pretty. And you look at these U-picks with raised beds and you think, oh, I need raised beds to do it or whatever it might be. Like, that's just an example. And it's not a, you know, but it's with composting too. I think people think that, oh, it has to be this really complicated thing. And it's like, no, it's literally a pile of poop. Mine is a pile of chicken poop, a pile of leaves, a pile of grass clippings, and my leftover stems. It's not that complicated.
It's really not that complicated. And I think as a flower farmer, you want things as simple as possible because life is already complicated.
Exactly.
So when I'm going, like you said, when I'm like going down my rows, I have either I'll throw it on the ground and then like scoop it up later, or I have one of those gorilla carts that my beds are wide enough. They're about 3 feet. So I can just pull it behind me and just like, you know, put the mm-hmm. foliage in there. And then I'll leave it on the outside of, cause we've got a lot of deer pressure. So I have to have everything fenced in. And then we'll just throw it in the back of the Kubota, take it up to the compost pile, dump it, turn it in a couple of weeks, and that's it. It's really not that hard. It's just maybe one extra step.
What would you do with it anyway? Like, it's got to go somewhere.
I'm not going to leave it like lying on the ground because it'll get gross and slippery and like, I don't want it there. And I could put it in my garbage can, which is also the same step as putting it into my compost pile. So it's just training your brain that this is a free resource for yourself. You're mm-hmm. investing in your farm by making your own compost, because the compost that you can get from, you don't know what's in there. You don't know what products they've used to break it down. Mm-hmm. And so I know what I've added to my compost. I know that I don't spray. I have no herbicides, no pesticides. So I know that I've got my donkey and horse manure. I've got food scraps, leaves, garden waste, vegetable waste, whatever, you name it, it'll go in there. And so I know I'm in control of the inputs. And so I'm really happy with the quality of my compost. Mm-hmm. And I've seen when people have brought in compost, what that looks like. It looks nothing compared to mine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because I would assume a compost company where you can buy it from, they are trying to turn that product as quickly as they can. They do not want to hold it any longer than they have to. Turn and burn, like, let's...
No, and I don't blame them. That's part, you know, I don't want to keep flowers.
That's a business model. But it's kind of like the quality that you could get from...
So a good way to test your compost, whether you're getting good quality compost, is just to do like a little, maybe ask for a sample if you're buying it from a compost company, is do like a seedling test. So you grab something like radish seeds or something that grows really quickly, and you plant it in like a little container, and you see what your seedlings look like. If they're really deformed, there's a problem with the compost. Mm-hmm. You really don't want to use that compost. It could have an herbicide in it. It could, you don't know what's in it. You can do the same thing with your own compost, just to kind of see whether, you know, your compost is ready, whether it's finished, whether you can start, you know, adding it to your field. You just do a very simple test with like beans or peas or radishes. Those things are like, you know, germinate quite quickly. Mm-hmm. And so then you kind of keep an eye on what your seedling looks like. And if it looks healthy, your compost is good. So easy to kind of test it.
It's so easy. Where did you learn all of this?
Trial and error, a lot of trial and error, and you make mistakes. And sometimes, you know, your compost is too wet or too dry. You pivot. I learned a lot of it in my classes that I took at the New York Botanical Gardens when I was getting my gardening certificate. I also learned it a little bit in my Master Gardener program, and just reading, doing a lot of reading, listening to podcasts. You pick up things. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, if you don't try, you're never going to know, you know, how good it can be and what you're missing out on. I call it like my black gold. It is just, it's beautiful. I get so excited over it. And knowing that, like, I added like a banana peel, and now at the end, I can't even tell. Mm-hmm. I can't even tell what it is. It is, I can't even explain it. It has no smell to it. It's like an earthy smell. And it's just this beautiful material, and my plants love it.
What about coffee grounds?
You can add that.
Okay. I have an espresso machine and I grind my own beans. So we go through a lot of coffee. And so I have like 6 Ziploc bags that I've not put that directly into my compost pile. I don't know why I haven't. I'm just like, we'll see. But
you definitely have compost or coffee beans. Basically, the ratio is 1-for-1. So you want one, it doesn't matter what kind of, let's say you have like a bucket. So you have a bucket of carbons and you have a bucket of nitrogen, and that is the right ratio. Or you have a wheelbarrow of carbons and you have a wheelbarrow, or like a backhoe, you know, so if as long as you're using the same size, you're using the right ratios.
So tell me, let's dive into that a little bit. What are nitrogens? What are carbons? So it's what would be in each category. So what would be in a category of carbons?
Leaves, straw, hay, cardboard, wood chips or sawdust, but wood chips and sawdust break down much more slowly, mm-hmm. but they do decompose. Then for the nitrogens, you have your veggie scraps, your fruit scraps, though you don't want to put too much citrus in there. Coffee would fall in there. The manure falls into that, though with the grass clippings as well. But if you leave your grass clippings too long, I think it becomes a carbon source once it becomes
like dried out.
Dried out. Yeah. And some people just leave it actually on their lawn. They just don't mm-hmm. even bother.
Yeah. We try to bag it every other time.
Yep. So those are like sort of the main things. Mm-hmm. So as long as your ratios are equal, you're good to go.
There we go. It's not that complicated.
Not that complicated. And there's a lot of good books on composting. I can send you some of the names of the books that I've read.
Yeah, I'll put them in the links for sure.
But it's getting over that initial fear that, you know, you're going to, I think the people that I've talked to, they're really, really worried about like having like raccoons and bears and animals rummage through their piles. Don't add like dairy or a lot of like, you don't want to like add like a whole jug of vegetable oil or anything like that. You just want to vegetable scraps. I mean, you might have some critters, but you know, they're aerating it for you as well, if you think about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally understand that. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me. I was really talking about compost.
Yeah, this is good. And then again, real quick, where can we find you on social media? Or if anyone is, I have listeners all over the world, actually. So if someone's local to you and wants to come buy flowers, say again, you know, your social media, your website, all of that.
My website, and I'm actually about to launch a new website, but it'll be the same thing. It's 80 miles north, 80 miles north, all one word. And that's also my Instagram handle. And I'm located in just outside of Millbrook, New York in the Hudson Valley. I'm mostly on social media in terms of Instagram. That's my jam.
Well, Lisa, thank you so much for coming and joining us. And we really appreciate it. Everyone just kind of needs to bloom and grow together and learn from each other.
Definitely.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Sunny Merrymeadow podcast. I'm your host, Liz. If you like what you're hearing, please subscribe and rate us. You can find us on Instagram, Pinterest, and Facebook at Sunny Merrymeadow. Subscribe to our email newsletter at sunnymerrymeadow.com. And if you have questions or comments or anything to say, we would love to hear from you. You can email us at podcast@sunnymerrymeadow.com.
Flowers, flowers, we love flowers. Sunny Merrymeadow, they smell so good. SunnyMerrymeadow.com.